Can you picture the first goal before the ball's even bounced? You might have the touch. When the weather's wet, can you feel who'll triumph? You've got the power. Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? Then you too might be harnessing the power of the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, call 1800 858 858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. Last episode now for NBL 24, Cody. And we have a championship winner, and it's the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. And it has to go down as one of the most amazing stories in all of Australian sport, not just basketball. The fact that they're 3 years into their history, they're now championship winners, and they've been very close to being championship winners in all three seasons that they've been in the NBL. So we'll talk about that on this week's show. Talk about Jack McVay being the MVP, Scott Roth making himself a Tasmanian hero for the rest of his life. I think you have to say it's a great missed opportunity for Melbourne United, and we'll talk about that on the show. And the rest of the league is making some moves as well. Your season in the NBL 1 is underway as well, Cody, and you've got two games in 2 days to look forward to this weekend, so we'll get your thoughts on all of that. As always, we're here thanks to Hoop 7 and Tab Touch. I'm Chris Pike, but the man you've all tuned in to hear from, the Warwick Senators. You're not the captain anymore, Cody. The Warwick Senators forward.
Yep.
Former Sydney Kings and Illawarra Hawks forward. Cody Ellis, thanks for joining me once again. And a week after playing your first game, how are you feeling?
Oh, yeah, look, still sore. No, it was good to get out there and have a run around. So, yeah, look, doubleheader this week, like you mentioned. So I'll be interested to see how I fare after Saturday night's game.
One game in. Have you made the right decision to keep playing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. So there's no regrets yet, which is good.
Not yet. But doubleheaders might be the thing that push you over the edge. All right, so we'll get your thoughts on that later in the show. But before we get stuck into breaking everything down, what were your thoughts on Sunday when you saw the Tasmania Jack Jumpers clinch the NBL championship? It was dramatic, as it was always going to be, but it's a hell of a story. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I wanted seven games.
Yes.
Honestly,
yes.
I wanted more of it because apart from the first game, that's got to be one of the best series Absolutely. We've ever seen. And yeah, look, it was a lot of fun. Every single game was a lot of fun. And I mean, you just look at what the last three games all decided by 2 points. It basically comes down to the very last play.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, if teams could figure out how to inbound the ball, you know, it could have been a different story. Yeah. But, you know, it's... yeah, look, massive congrats to the Jack Jumpers and to Scott Roth and what he's done there, and really cool to see.
You never got the chance to play down there because the Jack Jumpers weren't quite around, but what do you feel like, not only having a team in Tasmania has been enormous, and you can see the support the whole state's given the Jack Jumpers, so they were happy to just have a team. I feel like if they went 0-28, they still would have given the same support. They were right behind their team, but for that state to now have a championship-winning team in a national competition, what do you think it means?
Oh, it's massive. It's huge. And, you know, the announcement of the AFL as well, I think, you know, big things happening down on the island, which is really cool to see. Yeah, look, to have a national championship team in your first 3 years is very impressive. So, look, speaks volumes for the club itself, but also for the state and how they get around the team.
You look at what they've done over 3 years. Is it a place that you look at and wish that you either got to go and play for them or even go and just play against them in that environment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. Looks like a lot of fun. You know, even just to be involved in it would be awesome. So, yeah, look, they've done a great job. You know, the club itself has been just absolutely unbelievable in their community from what we see.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's too hard to get everyone in Tassie involved. They've been begging for a professional team for a long time. Yeah. So, yeah, look, they came out and drove and it was awesome. You saw people sitting outside the stadium watching the big screens as well, and it was really cool.
And they filled the stadium when they got back on Monday as well for their celebration. It's incredible. I don't know if we get that sort of reception anywhere in the country. I was part of a couple of Wildcats celebrations the next day in the city, and it's fair to say we only got a trickling of people turning up. It wasn't exactly packed like you might get for an AFL premiership celebration, but in Tasmania it's different. I think it's the key to it is the connection they've had with the community. They've made the community feel like it's their team, and I think that's crucial.
Oh, certainly is. Certainly is. And, you know, to see the fans come out the way they did and their little celebration and then their comeback is really cool to see. It's almost like what it was in the 90s with the, you know, Bulls, and you saw all the parades and all that sort of stuff. So, no, they did a really good job, and the community obviously absolutely loves the team, and to have a championship-winning team is huge for them.
What we saw on the court, like you said, it was incredible. The last three games of the series all decided by 2 points. So you had the game three that was decided with the Jack McVay, you know, half-court prayer, and then he had the chance to win game four with a half-court prayer, and it didn't quite go in. And then Matthew Dellavedova had a chance with a half-court prayer in game five that if that went in,
oh my goodness,
Melbourne would have won, and we would have a totally different story right now to be talking about. And in fairness to him, even though it was a desperation, you know, just a lob at the end, wasn't far away. I can't remember a series like that where every one of those last three games is decided on the very last shot as the buzzer sounds.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. Apart from the first game that was a bit of an anomaly and Melbourne came out and flexed the muscle, and that's kind of what we thought the series was going to look like. Again, that's us kind of just counting Tassie out again, you know, something that everyone seems to be doing since their induction in the NBL. So, no, look, they turned it around and really figured out, you know, how to play and kind of how to keep it in the 80s and keep Melbourne, you know, away from that 100-point game, because once you're playing that Melbourne team in the hundreds, it's tough to beat them.
I remember asking you after game one, are we going to see more than three games? I was voluntarily proven wrong, wasn't I?
Yep. Well, geez, so was I, honestly.
Yep. What I find amazing as we look back now, we talked all season long about how we thought Melbourne would win the championship because they're so deep, but they've also got such big-time experience. You've got Matthew Dellavedova, who's an NBA champion. Ian Clark's an NBA champion. Chris Golding's a multi-time Olympian and grand final MVP, multiple NBL championship winner. Go right through the list. Shea Ely, what he's done his whole career. Luke Travers is a championship winner. Ariel Huck-Porter is a big-time player. Joe Lualua-Chul is a championship winner. Go to their bench. Brad Newell is sitting on the bench when he's needed. But to me, the longer the series went, it felt like it was Tasmania that played with more poise, and they looked like they had the composure and big game experience. And to be honest, they handled the big moments better. How did you feel?
Yeah, no, absolutely. They it really seemed like Melbourne was very fractured, you know, throughout the longer the series went on. Like you said, I think you even just look at, you know, once the whistle was blown, I think every time there was a whistle against Melbourne, they'd be arms in the air, looking over to Dean, like Delhi especially.
Yes.
Asking for reviews and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. So it was, it was really interesting to see because, you would expect it to kind of go the other way. But, you know, I mean, the way Tassie kind of stuck together and never faltered and, you know, they're as even keel as Scott Roth was the whole time. And it was, very impressive to see.
Before we get into some more specifics, what adds to this Jack Jumper story is the fact that they had to do it the hard way in the semi-final series because they lost game one in Perth. And to get to that championship series, they had to win in Perth against the Wildcats. And then to win a championship, they had to win two games in Melbourne against that Melbourne team. That just makes the story all the more incredible, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It was just super impressive all around. You know, the fact that, you know, you beat Perth in a series is tough in itself, you know, especially when you have to come over this way. But yeah, doing it the hard way, like you said, dropping that first one and then having to back it up and win back-to-back games is, I mean, that's massive. And that's something that was very impressive. And then same thing in Melbourne. You know, they kind of stole home court in winning that game three in Melbourne and then lost it.
Yeah.
You know, lost it, you know, the next week. It's how it's got to be done. You know, it doesn't matter where you finish. I still feel like you've got to figure out how to steal a road game in series like this because, I think that just makes it all the more important. And Tassie, just as good as anyone, is stealing those.
You've been in this situation. You've played in both Perth and Melbourne. When you're trying to win a series on the road, could you imagine two harder jobs than what they faced in Perth and in Melbourne?
Yeah, look, not really. Perth for sure. I think that's a massive one. I think there's probably a couple. I think Sydney's probably you know, up there at the moment with how they pack their stadium out in terms of tough places to play. But look, the Melbourne fans always get around it and they're always rowdy. So, yeah, look, to be able to win a series when you're on the road in Perth, very impressive. And then a grand final series in Melbourne, also very impressive. So, yeah, look, I think they're probably two of the harder places to play. But on the flip side, Tassie seems like a very tough place to play as well. Absolutely. So, yeah, look, it was good. And it looked like both crowds were huge throughout the series.
I think we had a sellout for all five games, which is fantastic. We'll go through these guys in a bit more detail in our next segment, but clearly Jack McVay was grand final MVP. There was no other real option. He was incredible. But Jordan Crawford, we talked about him after game one. How does he get more involved? And he just got better and better every single game. And 27 points in the first half of a game five is incredible. Will Magnay, Simon Mitchell talked about him last week, how he expected him to have a big impact the rest of this series. He managed to do it with an injured hamstring, which was incredible in game five as well. We talked about Angus Glover's heroics last year. Sometimes it takes these special performances to win a championship.
Yeah, it certainly does. And look, all three of those guys were awesome. Mm. Like you said, McVay, there was no one else that even came close. I think if Melbourne had won it, it would have been Delhi.
Yeah. Interesting. If Melbourne won, does Jack still win anyway?
No. Okay. I think the days of someone else, you know, not from the championship winning team, winning that MVP is long over, unless someone comes out and averages 50 for a series.
Yeah, but I agree, because the player doesn't want it anyway. No. I mean, if you don't win a championship, what does a grand final MVP mean?
No, exactly. So I think it has to go to the winning team. Yep. So, no, look, very well deserved. Yeah, very, very clearly the MVP of that series and just, you know, kind of the finals in general. I think he just goes about his business and just makes timely plays, and that was really good. Jordan Crawford, like you said, just got better and better. Mm. I think became more of a focal point later in the series just to try and get him going because of how they were guarding the rest of their players. So, and then Magna, hurt his hammy on that first few minutes where he kind of got stepped out of his shoe and, it didn't look pretty. Yeah, look, you could see he was hurting. Yeah. But the fact that he kept on and kept battling against Melbourne's bigs and made some big-time plays down the stretch. Yeah.
I don't think they win. If he goes off after the first 2 minutes, I don't think they win because they're without Marcus Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, they just couldn't match up with Joe Lualuchul and Ariel Hotporty. They would have tried to go small with Majuk Deng and Fab Krislevic, but I don't think they win if Will doesn't tough it out.
No, he had no choice but to play. Yeah. You know? And look, it is one of those things that it's like, well, game five. Mm. There's nothing else. Yeah. Like, this is it. So I'm sure he's probably still hurting a little bit. Yeah. But, I'm sure he's thinking it's worth it. So
it's an interesting one. You say he had no choice, but out of what percentage of your teammates would you say would play through that in a game five? Or what percentage would say that they're injured and they have to come out and don't come back?
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. And I'm not sure. It's a really good question, actually, because... Yeah, I really don't know. I'm not really sure. There's certainly some players that...
But let's be honest, he's genuinely injured. So if he decided he couldn't play, then you accept that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, I totally agree. But I think most of the players on that Tasmanian team would have said, stuff it and kept playing. Yeah. So, playing hurt sucks. Mm. But, it's, again, like we saw with Gus... with his ribs and making big plays, it's a lot easier to get up for a game five or a game three or a deciding game or whatever it is when you're injured, rather than a game throughout the season.
Yeah, Wilman Gow-White, someone that would have played through. He played through a lot this year too.
Yes, he did.
All right, got some big questions for you, Cody. Let's run through these and then we'll take our first break and break down some of the championship series a bit more. Answer me this. Why was it so hard through the entire playoff series? Why was it so hard in the last minute or even in the last 10 seconds for teams to inbound the ball?
Everyone was trying to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, it was frustrating to watch. And everyone had three or four different players in the backcourt, trying to screen for each other and someone move, someone decoy this way and you screen for him so he can get open here. And honestly, the best thing they could have done was kind of clear it. Have everyone else up the court clear it, especially if it's in the backcourt, which it was for a majority of these.
Yeah.
So, look, just clear it out. Let the point guard stand there, I think a lot of guards, especially late in games, feel like they've got to try and, you know, juke and move and try to beat their defender to a spot and try to get open that way, where realistically, if you, and look, it's easier said than done, but especially backcourt, if you stand there, if you stand still and see whether the defender is guarding you, right, you just hold them off and have whoever's inbounding throw it away from them, go and get it. It's not overly difficult. I think once it's in the front court, it's a bit different because you've got a lot less space, definitely. But yeah, look, we saw some really, really average inbounds, and just some, with that very last one in game five, Goulding was probably holding. Yeah. I think it was a still over social media where, like, as he jumped, you could see he was pulling the shirt, but I mean, that's all fairly incidental. You're not going to make that call at that point of the game. So,
gee, if Jelly's shot falls, though, it becomes a talking point, doesn't it?
It certainly does. You're right. And especially after, you know, the one where JLA got away with it.
On Gary Clark. You know.
Mm-hmm. So it's tough. But, yeah, look, there's lots of it became such a big point this season, or this final series. And, well, not even this series, but the whole
before that, we go back to Kyle Edmund with the Hawks,
which again, you know, hadn't played a second, and that's tough. You gotta have trust in someone that plays to be able to inbound it. Like it's a tough thing to do. It is a tough thing to do, and look, obviously, there's a lot on the line for it, but a lot of them were these little, like, kind of just floaty passes.
It's almost like the guy passing was scared to make a mistake. Yeah. But by not being assertive with his pass, just kind of led to a turnover.
And that's where the defenders can. Is there's too many good defenders in this league for that? You know, you need to kind of frozen rope it. let it fly. And but yeah, look, we saw some elite players turn it over, which you wouldn't expect to see. Delhi being top of that list.
Yeah. It's amazing. All three of those, the last three games were all decided almost by a pass late in the game. So game three was the one with Delhi that led to Jack McVay's shot. Game four was you know, when Joe Lualuchul intercepted when I think it was Sean McDonald was trying to get it to Mujuk Deng.
Yep.
And then game five was that one you just talked about as well with, I think it was Jack McVay trying to inbound it. Incredible.
And that one that JLA stole, that was there. That pass was there, but it was half a second too late.
Second too late, and Joe was just too strong for Mujuk as well.
But I still think if
the pass was on the wrong side as well.
If it had been thrown earlier, right spot, but wrong timing.
And Mujuk probably goes up for a dunk.
He does, 100%. Like I said, I reckon it was half a second too late. If he had have seen that little bit earlier and led him with it instead of kind of reacting to, oh, he's open, that's probably... I mean, we're talking about Tassie possibly winning that four rather than five. So, but again, you know, the pressure is huge in this situation, and lots of that sort of stuff that you think is easier to talk about sitting here, not being part of it, is a lot tougher.
Well, how do you find inbounding the ball? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah. Look, I do like being the one to be fouled and shoot free throws for sure.
Yeah.
But no, look, I'm just as confident in myself as anyone inbounding it. So, I think so.
All right, let's go down these questions. This is a question without having done any research, and you haven't had not much advance notice either, but where does what the Jack Jumpers have done in their first 3 years put them in terms of all new expansion franchises across Australian sport? I think clearly they're the best that's done it in the NBL.
Yeah.
I know the South Dragons won a championship pretty quickly, but they also had a wooden spoon season, and then they were gone off the face of the earth straight away as well. So I think clearly they're the best to do it in the NBL that's come in as a new team. But across Australian sport, I mean, you look at, you know, the two AFL clubs, the Gold Coast Suns and the GWS Giants, and they were basket cases straight away. I think the Melbourne Storm probably have a good case in the NRL. They were winning premierships very quickly, but off the top of my head, I mean, it's very hard to say that the Jack Jumpers aren't the best new franchise in Australian sport.
Oh, they'd be top of the list for sure. Mm. And there'd be a fair gap between, I think. Mm. I think if you look at, you know, the where it is and resources and stuff like that, compared to, like I said, Melbourne Storm, you know, Melbourne, you've got all the resources in the world at your disposal. You know, Tassie, one of those places that just hasn't had a professional sports team for so long, mm-hmm. or not in the basketball or footy or, you know, rugby world anyway. Yeah, so, look, I think they'd be top of the list very easily. And, you know, the fact that they've made two grand final series in their first 3 years, I don't think there's really any other franchise in the world in any sport that can say that they've done that.
Yeah.
You know, and still made playoffs in that year between as well. So,
and they were very close to getting there. Yeah. I mean, that series against the Breakers was very tight the whole way.
That's it. So, you know, I think... And look, that's where we measure success, right, is championships. You know, as much as it's frustrating because there's a lot more that goes into it, that's kind of it. So I think the fact that you can say that you've been to two grand final series in your first 3 years, not many other teams ever can say that they've done that, I'm sure.
And even the first year, the series was a sweep against Sydney, but it was a lot closer than that looked. And also they were very... shorthanded with injury from memory as well, going back to that series. What about this series? So after game one, the total margin across the last four games was 11 points. I go back to the rivalry that the Breakers and the Wildcats had, and they were some hotly contested grand final series over three games. But I don't feel like they were close and they were tight and they were hard fought and they were dramatic, but not necessarily as high quality as I feel like these games with the Jack Jumpers were. Melbourne United in the 36s, going back to 2018, went to five games, and that was pretty exciting. But by the time it got to game five, Melbourne had wore Adelaide down. Yep. I don't know if I've seen a better NBL championship series. Can you remember one?
No, not at all. And, you know, like we said in the intro, like apart from game one, this, you know, that was a bit of the anomaly. But to have the last four games decided by 11 points total is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, that is absolutely crazy. And I think that first game was the first time Tassie had lost by double digits this season. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that in itself is impressive. Mm. But, look, just unbelievable basketball from both teams. And we saw, you know, big comebacks and all that sort of stuff. I think in each one of these games, one of the teams got out by 10, 12 points at some point and just drew it right back to make a game with it. And the fourth quarters were always so close and there was always... some sort of fun thing to talk about, or there was always something that that would get social media going, and it was just an awesome series and some really clutch basketball and some really fun basketball to watch.
All right, Cody, let's take our first break. We'll get Elvis under control, who's going a little bit nuts today. He's a bit overexcited. We'll hear from Tab Touch, and then we'll come back and keep this chat going.
Sounds good.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball has even bounced? Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? You've got the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more.
Okay, back on Hoop 7's Basketball Hustle. I'm here with Cody Ellis once again this week. Let's keep this conversation going, Cody, running down these list of questions. Simon Mitchell last week talked about how he had no doubt in the world that Jack McVay's shot to win game three was the greatest shot in NBL history. And he also said that if they go on to win a championship, it further cements that and it goes into folklore. Well, they did end up going to win the championship. Now that we can look back on it with that knowledge, is it the best shot in NBL history?
Yeah, no doubt in my mind. I think, you know, with everything riding on it, it was massive. And to kind of steal that home court, like I said, I do think that that's certainly in my books one of the greatest shots in NBL history, with everything, you know, weighing on his shoulders as well. So yeah, absolutely, no doubt in my mind.
Is there even another one that jumps into your mind to rival it right now?
In terms of where it was shot from, absolutely not. You know, D-Mac hitting the game winner, and I think it was only game one. To steal game one, and then Ikeni and Beckway.
Yeah, that's the only other one that comes to mind for me. And Simon talked about it last week. Because of the moment and it clinched the championship, it's big. But in terms of difficulty of a shot, it's kind of a everyday shot for him.
Well, that's it. And that's kind of what I was talking to Lauren about, because we were talking about it a little bit after he'd made it. And the New Zealand one, it was a tie ball game. New Zealand were already up. I think it was 1-0 in the series. Yeah. I think it was only three-game series then.
Also pretty sure it was over Lousy.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was. Yeah, that's a good point. But New Zealand kind of had their number that series anyway. It was a bit of an odd series, that one. D-Mac, same thing. I think it was a tie ball game. And he kind of made that little mid-range with the elbow. Apart from that, there's not a whole lot with this, you know, this kind of gravity involved. I mean,
it's certainly better than Damon Lowry's free throws.
Yeah, that was just, yeah, I'm not sure where you'd put that, to be honest with you. Yeah, free throws to win it is a tough one. It's not as hyped up and everything that it was. It's kind of a bit anticlimactic compared to a, I mean, step inside the half court.
Yes.
As soon as he shot, I was like, what's he doing? Mm-hmm. And then cash, and it was, yeah. So I do think that, yeah, Jax is definitely top of the list.
Mm. What about Scott Roth? I know you can't put him in the category of a Brian Gorgian and a Trevor Gleeson just because he doesn't have the number of championships, but in terms of one-time championship coaches, I mean, he's got to be right at the top of the list. To me, he has to go down as one of the great NBL coaches, even though he's now only been doing it for 3 years.
Oh, I totally agree. I think with what he's done in his short time, and not only on the court, but like we've mentioned earlier, like just the involvement within the community and everything, just the involvement of the community and how he's got the whole of Tasmania involved within the club, and the fact that...
And the whole state that loves him.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, you know, he's had the entire state, not even the state, I think the whole country, has kind of fallen in love with what he's done and how his passion just runs so deep. Mm. And honestly, you put most other people in his shoes and the club's not as successful as they are. I really don't know if there's anyone that could do what he's done with that team and that community. So, yeah, look, in terms of one-time championship coaches, he's definitely up there.
Yeah. What about the performance of Sean McDonald? Off the top of your head, has a development player ever done what he's done? His performance in the entire five-game series was incredible. I mean, he scored 9.6 points, which was a nice addition. I mean, he came up with some big shots, but he played, he averaged over more than 29 minutes a game. And he was guarding Chris Golding most of that time. And more importantly, I think, or just as importantly, he made Chris Golding have to guard him.
Yeah.
And he made Chris have to work defensively. It seems silly to call him a development player because he's so much better. But, I mean, we've never seen a better development player performance.
No, we certainly haven't. And, look, you know, the fact that, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a development player win a league-wide award either in Most Improved. So just what he's done this year has been unreal, and that's, I mean, that obviously goes a long way towards, you know, well, I mean, that's a lot of credit goes to Scott Roth and his coaching staff for having that kind of faith and trust in him and giving him that opportunity. His just composure is well beyond kind of his years, I think is probably the most impressive thing for me. And look, you talk about the job he did on, it was probably more on Shea and Delly than on Goulding, because I think Drimmick actually did a really good job.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right, yeah.
And I think kind of the job Drimmick did on Goulding will go a bit unnoticed because Goulding still did what he did.
Yeah.
But every shot was a tough one, and that was super impressive. Yeah. But yeah, back to McDonald, I think that even going back to the Perth series, you know, the way he didn't take Bryce out of it, but the job he did on Bryce was unbelievable. And you're right, the fact that he made them guard him on the other end is the big thing. And that's something that we haven't really, really seen too much in the league is you're either an elite offensive player or an elite defensive player. And I think he's teetering on both. I think just the confidence in general, you know, the fact that he was one of the best three-point shooters in the league all season.
Yeah.
And even his little float game when he gets inside, I think is tough to guard. And then, you know, he's usually the one taking the best guard on the other team. Yeah. So, yeah, it's tough to call him a DP. I know technically he is. But, look, he's just as important as anyone on that team.
I didn't expect to be saying this, but in the end, the Jack Jumpers won because they were the best team, like we talked about. And it's a hell of an effort to do that against that Melbourne team that we all predicted at the start of the season would win the championship, and we never wavered from that thought the whole way through. We've touched on this a little bit, but were you surprised that it was the Jack Jumpers that looked the more composed and better executing team? Because especially late in games, and you look at Game 5 in the last 2 minutes especially, that period when they couldn't get a stoppage or a timeout, and because Dean only had one timeout left, they couldn't call the timeout to get Dally back in the game. They almost wasted probably three or four possessions where their offense was completely off kilter. Were you surprised that it was the Jack Jumpers that were executing so much better?
No, not really. I think that's just kind of what we've come to know from Tassie, is just that execution, that even kilter. Yeah, look, United, you're right. I think once Dally was out, it was kind of a bit all over the joint.
Yeah.
There was no one to really run the show.
Mm.
And that's because Dally's done it all season long. Yeah. So, you know, it's tough to have someone come in and fill those shoes. And, yeah, look, bit of an average situation for them with Dean only having the one timeout and needing to keep that up his sleeve. You're right. They just looked all over the place with Dally off the court for that, you know, probably nearly 2 minutes, I think it was. But, yeah, look, Tassie just kind of did exactly what they've done pretty much since they came into the league, is just execute and do what the game plan says and get through it and not falter from that.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, look, obviously very pretty to watch.
Feels harsh to say, but at the same time, with such a small margin, it comes down to small differences. And I feel like Scott Roth clearly outcoached Dean Vickerman over the last four games. If you look at the adjustments he made, and I think you make a great point. Sometimes not overloading your players with too complex schemes can help. And I think Scott has his system and he has what he wants his players to do, but he doesn't overcomplicate it. So that helps, I think, when you get into pressure situations where your players know what to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you've got too many things you're trying to run, you try to overcomplicate it, you try to outsmart the opposition, sometimes you don't then execute. How do you feel the coaching battle ended up?
Oh, it was great. And look, I do think you're right, and Roth probably getting the wood over Dean in that instance. But, I mean, look, that's two of the best coaches in the league going at it. And, you know, Dean, obviously, coach of the year and very well deserved. And, yeah, look, it was a tough one.
It's amazing. Scott wasn't even a finalist in coach of the year.
No, he wasn't. And that's because they were kind of a bit of an outlier coming into playoffs.
Yeah,
and look, there was some pretty Cinderella stories in that kind of in that race there. So look, I think the way Scott Roth is coached, he should be in the running every single year, really. Yeah, look, that's another conversation we can have. But in terms of this coaching battle, you're right. I do think that Scott probably got the win in that, and obviously with Tassie winning it. Look, the way he adjusts and the way him and his coaching staff kind of figure out, you know, the little nuances of the games that, like you said, that end up winning championships and winning series, it is really cool to see. And it's something that not a whole lot of coaches are fantastic at. So, yeah, look, it's not overly surprising that Tassie was able to adjust.
It feels funny to say this as well, because we talked all season about how deep Melbourne is and how that's their great strength, but the longer that series went, it felt like they had less scoring options than the Jack Jumpers as well, because Simon broke this down interestingly last week. Shay Ely, for as many good things as he does, he's not necessarily a great creator for his teammates. And then Dally, I guess the more pressure came on in the series, he wanted to do more and more himself, and he did a great job of it. He almost won them a championship, so you don't take that away from him. But then the Jack Jumpers had so many other options they could go to. I mean, Jack McVay came up big all season, but then Jordan Crawford had his moments. Milton Doyle, late in game five, a couple of those driving baskets were huge. Sean McDonald came up huge as well. Felt like the Jack Jumpers had more options.
And look, this has probably been used way too much in the basketball world, but like trusting the process,
yes,
I think is something that Tassie do so well. And the trust in teammates and the trust in, well, if it's your turn to shoot, you'll live with if you make it or miss it, you know. And you're right. It did seem like Melbourne kind of had too many guys that kind of wanted to take it over a little bit.
Yep.
You're right.
Yep.
Dally did an unbelievable job, and he just kind of willed his way to score buckets and make big time plays. Goulding is probably the one on that team that was happy with just the shots he was getting.
Yeah.
I don't think he overly hunted shots, but you know,
there was no easy shots created for him. Every single shot he took was contested and tough, and he made a lot of them, fairness to him, but he didn't get any easy looks, did he?
No, he didn't, and that was obviously a game plan, because once he goes off, that team is different, very different. So Roth would have said, look, we'll let Dele beat us. Mm. You know, honestly, if he's going to be the guy that scores all their points, then there's other guys that aren't touching the ball. Yep. And I think Ian Clark in spurts was a game changer for them. Yep. I think he was so good, and I feel like every time he touched it, it looked like he was going to make a play. Yep. And he did most of the time. Mm. Like most of the time he had the ball in his hand, he made a play, yep, whether it was a bucket or a good pass, mm, and he drew in two defenders and made the right play. Mm. And I don't think that happened as much as it probably needed to down the stretch. Mm. Because you're right, I think Dele became ball dominant, and Simon's right with Shea as well. Look, he's not a fantastic shooter, although he's shot a little bit better. Yeah. He's also not the best playmaker. Mm. You're right. I think he is that absolute elite defender. Yeah. But you do pay for it a little bit on the other end of the floor. Yeah, look, it was really interesting and a matchup of kind of two completely different teams.
Mm. Talk about how close this series was. I want to get your thoughts on this. Take a look at some of these numbers. So game one slews this one a little bit. So the Jack Jumpers across five games, 425 points, Melbourne 441. But then the shooting numbers are incredible. So across the entire series, the Jack Jumpers took 376 field goals, Melbourne 377. Very little in the percentages, 42 to 44% as well. The Jack Jumpers took 123 pointers and Melbourne 123. Again, only 1% in the difference as well. And free throws, Tasmania 94, Melbourne 89, 69 to 66%. Jack Jumpers a little bit of an advantage in rebounds, 231 to 217, 75 offensive to 66 offensive for Melbourne. Those numbers are incredible across five games.
Yeah, how does Tassie win this series? Looking at that, yeah, you know, like it's just, it's crazy. And, you know, throughout the entire series, it was quite baffling because honestly, if you were watching these games without the scoreboard, you'd say Melbourne was the better team for a good majority of that whole series. You know, even some of the games that Tassie won, you know, they went on like a 6-7 minute spurt and that was it.
Yep.
You know, Melbourne were a lot better team for the other 33 minutes. It was really, really impressive from Tassie and just, you know, a credit to how they stay in games. Mm. And we spoke about how that game one was the first time they'd lost by double digits. Mm. Well, Tassie winning that two games in a row was the first time Melbourne had lost back-to-back games the whole season. Yeah. So, you know, a couple of big-time records broken or snapped in this series. And, yeah, look, it's actually pretty crazy looking at the numbers like that because it's just crazy how close it was. And, yeah, look, not the least bit surprising with how good the series was.
Let's go back to Jack McVay. Clearly the grand final MVP, fully deserved. I mean, his numbers are great. I mean, 17.8 points, 8.4 rebounds, 2.2 assists, 46% field goal shooting. And Melbourne tried to take away his three-point shots for a lot of the series, so he probably didn't take as many threes as he usually would, but he still made 44% and the biggest shot in NBL history as well. His numbers are great, but I think his impact was even bigger than those numbers suggest. And also, clearly outpointed Luke Travers across the five games too.
Yeah, he did. And that was a really interesting little matchup between those two. And yeah, look, I mean that's some pretty impressive numbers for you know for a grand final series. I had that one big game in game four with 28-7. But across the board, I think he was just super important for them. Had a couple games there where you kind of look at it and you went, oh, yeah, it's a decent game, but his impact on it was a lot more than what the numbers showed, like you'd already mentioned. But the fact that him being out there and Melbourne knowing, well, we've got to guard him, I think is just as big. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't quite understand, that he shot 44.5% from three on probably not a whole lot of attempts throughout the series. But the fact that you can take advantage once you get those open shots. And we saw it with Chris Goulding, not that he got open shots, but if you can step up without having shot a three for, could have been a full game almost, and still knock it down and have that confidence, and he's probably one of the most confident guys in the league, is massive and something that, you know, it's a backbreaker. You know, once someone finally gets that after you've done such a good job, it really just demoralizes the defense. And yeah, he was absolutely elite.
Jordan Crawford is the other fascinating one. So when we spoke 2 weeks ago after game one, I think we had a look at his last two games against the Wildcats and then game one, and I think he was averaging 4 points a game from memory. The last four games, he got better and better, and he had that, I think those 13 points in game two came in the first 6 minutes of the game, and then, you know, he had big impacts, and then 27 points in a half of game five was an incredible performance. It's not easy to bounce back when you're out of form in the middle of a championship series and do what he did. What do you make of what he did?
Well, he'd probably had a down month. So the probably three-ish weeks leading into the playoffs, he was not the same Crawford that we'd seen through that middle stretch of the season. Yeah. Shots weren't dropping. It looked like he was a bit down on his confidence and Donald was playing some big minutes and that was probably playing in the back of his mind. And yeah, look, he wasn't fantastic in that Perth series. And then obviously game one, same thing. Yeah. Kind of came out and just couldn't get a rhythm. And yeah, look, that game two, the way he came out and the way that they focused on him, gave him the ball and said, go for it. Like, this is, like, you start us off. This is
I think it was great because Melbourne wasn't expecting them to do that either.
No, and he shot, I reckon he shot four or five of his six threes in that first, like, 3 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
And a couple of them wide open.
Yep.
You know, after missing a couple and then he'd get a wide open one, you're like, oh, that's a tough one to shoot, right?
Yeah.
Because, but you can't pass that up. Mm. And that's what we saw. He didn't pass it up, knocks it down.
Yeah.
I think that's the confidence that Ross instills in all of his players. And he was absolutely a game changer. You know, he kept him in it in that first half.
Yep.
You know, 27 points in game five in that first half is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And look, we knew that it wasn't going to continue on that way because Melbourne were going to adjust and figure out what to do.
But he needed to. I think from memory, Milton Doyle was scoreless in the first half.
Yeah, and Melbourne did an unbelievable job on Milton Doyle this series.
Yep.
He wasn't a non-factor, but he was as close as we've seen to a non-factor with Milton Doyle. So, look, Crawford just kept him in it, kept him in striking distance in that first half. And yeah, it was really cool to see. You know, make some big shots and some tough shots.
He loves the big moment, doesn't he? He loves the big moment.
And Tassie, you've got a pretty good record of getting guys that love the moment.
Absolutely.
So, look, it was really good to see and really happy that he kind of found his rhythm in the biggest game of the season.
Well, in that first season, Josh Adams loved the big moment, didn't he?
Absolutely
he
did.
He turned himself into an unstoppable shooter in that run. Jordan also showed why he probably belonged in one of those all-NBL teams.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. I think he did. And look, the league is so stacked with talent that it's tough. Someone's got to miss out.
Yeah.
The fact that he kind of went on that bit of a month stretch of being not the same Crawford we'd seen was probably why he didn't end up making one of those teams. But, I mean, he certainly proved it in game five.
All right, Cody, last thing on the championship series, and then we'll take our last break. How does Melbourne United now reflect on this season? We thought all season long they were championship favourites, finished the regular season three games clear on top of the standings. They win game one by 23 points, like we talked about. They were 15 points up, 3 minutes into the second half of game two. Had home court advantage. How do they look back on this?
It's tough. It really is. I think, you know, we spoke about it with the Wildcats where it was championship series or bust for them.
Yep.
I do think Melbourne will be looking at this as certainly the one that got away because they were the most dominant team all season by a long way. And, you know, apart from a little stretch where they weren't fantastic towards the end of the year.
But like you said before, they still never lost consecutive games.
No, but and it's so tough to be at the top of your game all season. It really is a tough one. I think that, you know, you finish on top, you've got home court advantage, you've done all the work to give yourself the best opportunity to win a grand final series. But grand final series are tough to win. You know, we've seen elite teams come away without a championship ring. And I think that's certainly what we saw here.
In hindsight, it feels like a funny question to ask because we talked about how deep they were all season, but were they missing one offensive weapon? I mean, Dally tried to be that offensive weapon. Chris Golding is an elite shooter, but he's pretty one-dimensional. They weren't quite ever able to get Joe Lualuchul enough of the ball, really, to have a big impact. They decided to go the entire season without only one import. It kind of felt like Luke Travers is I mean, look how offensively passive he is. He doesn't go in. He's not a guy you'll give the ball to and let him go to work to score. In hindsight, were they one offensive weapon short?
It's tough, right? Because if you bring in another offensive weapon, then you're taking away one of your other advantages, right? So if you bring in another offensive weapon, then realistically, you're probably bringing in another guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're taking away from Dele, from Shea, from Goulding, from LT. You know, he does play that three sometimes. Yep. It's tough because you're taking away some of your other advantages. Mm. I think they had all the pieces, really. They had all the pieces.
I'll tell you what, we never saw Tanner Krebs this whole series. No. He was a non-factor, wasn't he?
We didn't really see him a whole lot this season. Yeah. I don't think he kind of lived up to what everyone's expectations were. Mm. I thought he would come in and he'd be a game changer for these guys. To have someone like him come off the bench and be that spark, he could have been that guy. Mm. Honestly, he could have been that guy. He did have a few minutes here and there and was kind of just out there. And that's part of him being young still and probably not overly ready to go when his number was called.
Yeah.
It is a tough one. Look, only one import, but you got a next star that was an import, in Hutt Porty. But I think like JLA wasn't as good as we've seen. Hutt Porty is similar. I think he really only got his points off scrapping for the offensive rebounds and putting them back. LT had spurts, but it was usually in the first quarter of the games and then would kind of go a little bit missing. And I think a lot of that has to do with Dele being so ball dominant this series. So it is a tough one. Look, I'm sure if you added another piece, Dean would figure out how to slot them in. And I'm sure that we'd be probably talking a little differently right now. But I still think they had all the pieces to win this thing. And the fact that they were so dominant throughout the season, I think, proves that.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Cody, I think we've done a pretty good job breaking down that championship series. Let's take our last break. We'll hear from Tap Touch and come back and wrap things up for this season.
Sounds good.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball has even bounced? Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? You've got the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more.
Okay, back on Hoop Sevens, a basketball hustle, our last segment now for this season. Cody, I don't know how to wrap up what we saw in 2024 from the NBL. I think it's fair to say the quality of the competition was fantastic. You look at the way it ended with the championship series, it was exciting. Both semifinal series went to three games and could have gone either way. It's hard to sum things up like that, but how do you feel now that you can reflect on NBL 24?
Yeah, look, it's really hard to kind of sum it up really quickly, but probably one of the better seasons we've seen from top to bottom. Just the talent that the league keeps getting is unbelievable, and it's really good. And I think Liam's done a really good job with that Next Stars program, and just the quality of kids coming from all over the world to come and play here is awesome, and something that's just going to keep growing. Especially if you see a guy like Alex Sargo number one or two, I think that's only going to grow the league more and more, and we're going to just see some unbelievable names coming down this way before they really take off in their career, and that's going to be something that's really exciting moving forward.
I think especially without the G League Ignite program in existence, that's only going to help our Next Stars program.
Certainly is, and that's pretty big. I'm actually pretty surprised that has happened. But that only means good for the league for sure.
Okay, so we're not in free agency yet, but we're still seeing some movement.
Whispers.
Yeah, so Nathan Sobey, he's officially been released from his contract at the Brisbane Bullets.
Yep.
The club that he's going to can't officially announce that he's there just yet, but I think every sign is pointing towards him going to the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, teaming up again with Mitch Creek, which will be fascinating to see. I'm going to say this anyway. I don't know if we've seen it announced, but Simon Mitchell is back at the Phoenix as well, heading up basketball. If it
If it hasn't been made public yet, he's at least in his office there at the Phoenix. So he's made some big statements already. Assuming that this is all going to happen, what are your thoughts on Sobey leaving the Bullets, first of all, and then joining the Phoenix?
Well, yeah, look, that's massive for both clubs. Mm. I think Sobes has done an unbelievable job at Brisbane, kind of leading from the front. Mm. And, you know, everything you hear about him is he's always the hardest worker and he's, you know, always there and he kind of leads by example. Mm. So it was kind of interesting, some of the comments that came out, you know, looking in a bit of a different direction and all that kind of thing. But look, the fact that Southeast have possibly picked up Sobes is massive. Yeah. And teaming him back up with Mitch Creek, and you've probably got, you know, the best local two-man and the best local four-man in the league currently. So, look, that's huge. And I'm sure Southeast have probably gone, or they've put their name in the hat for the Will McDowell-White pickup, every other team, I'm sure.
Yep.
So, look, they're already making some pretty big splashes. Mm. Massive moves early.
The other interesting one, and again, the team that he's gone to can't announce this just yet, but Will Kowal is a fascinating one. Mm-hmm. So Adam Ford's talked about how he would give up his pay packet to keep him in Cairns, but he's now left the Cairns Taipans, and it looks like he'll be joining the Sydney Kings. Mm-hmm. I mean, similar question. Are you surprised that he's left Cairns, and what do you think he does for Sydney?
Yeah, look, it's a tough one. I think Fordy's kind of done an unbelievable job of propelling some players that probably wouldn't have been the same kind of player if they hadn't played under him. You know, Keanu being one of them, Bull Kowal being another. Yeah. I think that's it's got to be tough. It does have to be tough, but I'm sure, you know, there was some absolutely ridiculous money thrown his way as one of the best defenders in the league for sure. So that's kind of what Sydney need is kind of that, you know, that defender. That's kind of what they've been missing this last season.
Well, they had Justin Simon, and then even before that, Wine, he played an important role doing that.
Yep, and that's kind of a piece that they were missing this year. So, look, if true, again, huge signing. looks like that there's, from what I was reading as well, looks like Gus is probably out.
Yes.
And very possible at Phoenix as well, from what we're reading. So, yeah, look, lots of movement early, but, obviously none of it official yet.
Did we see Bull driving around in a similar sort of a car to Keanu that he's getting the big money?
Probably. Probably be given one.
Not a lot else we can talk about in terms of the free agency because it hasn't officially started yet, Cody. So we'll see how it unfolds. And even though this is our last show of the season officially, in the off-season we might come back from time to time and keep people updated. What is going on right now, though, Cody, is your NBL1 West season. Gee, it was an exciting way to start last week. Two of your new teammates, Michael Harris from the Wildcats and Todd Withers, who formerly was a import of the 36ers, they combined for 73 points, and you played, I think it was 26 minutes on the back of a very limited preparation. It was a nice way to start.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Look, bit of a new team, you know, lots of fresh faces and new coaching staff and lots to work on for sure. But when you've got guys like Michael Harris and Todd Withers with their scoring power, it's it makes it a little easier to kind of transition. Mm. So, look, really good start. I think the Eagles, you know, East Perth was certainly missing a couple of pieces. Jeremy Grace, David Aquera, you know, those guys not playing.
Lee Roberts,
who, is expected to come back later in the season. Yeah, look, they're going to be legit, and we actually play them again this weekend, so we get them out of the way early. So we won't see them at full strength unless we come across them come playoffs. Mm. So, yeah, look, it was a good way to start the season, and then doubleheader this weekend. So, can't complain too much.
Yeah, a close look at Sunday Ditch as well. You haven't been able to escape him.
No,
either.
Absolutely not. No, it was. It's good to have a guy of Sunday's caliber in the league again. It's been a while since I played against Sunday, and yeah, look, I mean, he came out ready to go, 30 points, and I think he's going to use this season to really show off his scoring prowess and improve on that end of the floor because everyone knows what he does defensively.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, his next contract is going to come from from what he can do on the offensive end for sure, because he's certainly proven the defensive end.
One more thing, NBL-wise, one of the guys that not necessarily fun to play against, but I think you would have to respect him from coming up against him. Matt Wundenberg will play game 500, so he decided he didn't want to sit on 499 for the rest of his life, and he's come back this season to play game 500. Becomes only the third man in the league history behind Troy Clark and Seb Salinas, who we spoke about last year when he did it, to reach the mark, and the only guy that's done it at one club.
Yeah.
So he's done it the whole time at the Geraldton Buccaneers. From watching his career, I imagine he's horrible to play against.
Nightmare.
I can only imagine over 500 games how many corks he's given to opponents and how many little elbow jabs he's thrown, but he's an ultimate competitor. Everyone in Geraldton loves him. He's won 2 championships. What are your reflections on playing against him, and what are your thoughts on him reaching 500 games?
Yeah, look, just sore thinking about it, honestly. look, he's one of the great pieces of Geraldton basketball, and you know, whenever you think of Gero, you think of him for sure. Him and Ralphie are probably the two that I think of straight away. 500 is ridiculous. That's so many games, and you know, massive congratulations to him. Them and Kalgoorlie didn't play last week, so this will be their first game this weekend. So,
same night they raised their championship banner, so it's a hell of a celebration.
Hell of a celebration. So, look, ultimate competitor, like you said, does all the little dirty things that you need from kind of your big man, and you need someone on your team like that. And it's no surprise why they've been so successful with him on their team, just because of all the little things he does, and he's kind of the glue that helps hold that team together and that club together, and kind of epitomises that country toughness.
Is there anyone you hate playing against more, though?
Probably not. Probably not. I mean, he's one of those guys that you'd absolutely love on your team, but he's just a nightmare to play against. He just has a knack for the ball as well. You know, he's not the most athletic anymore, but he's so strong, and he kind of understands his role. He gets it, you know, and that's you know, that's why he's been so successful, and you're right, why he's a nightmare to play against.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so we'll keep an eye on how your NBL-1 season goes, Cody, at the Warwick Senators, and we'll come back from time to time and keep people updated, and especially when we've got more NBL news, and even as the Olympics get closer as well, that's going to be fascinating to watch both the Boomers and the Opals, and even South Sudan, and hopefully New Zealand make it as well.
Yep.
So we'll come back from time to time, but this has been a fun season, and especially fun to work with Tab Touch as closely as we did, and it was fun trying to come up with those exclusives each and every week. And eventually, Will Magnate got us a double-double, but it was when we didn't have a bet on him in Game 5 on Sunday. But thanks to Tab Touch, especially for their support, that was good fun this year.
Yeah, it was. So, big thank you to those guys. Mm. And you're right, it's been fun working with them and talking to them on the radio every Friday morning and kind of sharing my thoughts and, kind of giving us a bit of exposure as well. Mm. And it's... big thank you to them, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we'll probably try to keep some NBA multis going up until the end of the NBA season as well. So make sure you keep checking out tabtouch.com.au or download the TabTouch app. Thank you to Hoop7 for their ongoing support as well. So if you're in Perth, check them out on Murray Street, or if you're anywhere else, go to hoop7.com.au. Thank you to Simon Mitchell for his support as well, and hopefully he can come back and join us next year as well, even though he's back into clubland, Cody. So thank you to Simon for all of his insights throughout the year. And thank you to you, Cody, for trusting me to sit alongside me each and every week and breaking down what we're seeing. I'll leave things there and let you have the final say.
Yeah, no, look, thank you again, man. Been another fun season, and I actually can't believe that it's wrapping up. I feel like it wasn't too long ago that we were just starting this thing back up again. So, look, thank you, man, and really appreciate all the work you do. And, been another fun season, man. So looking forward to moving forward.
The first one with a third co-host, Elvis, as well, who's been a nightmare today.
Yes, he has. We had to lock him away because he was being a little too loud. So, big shout-out to Elvis as well.
Can you picture the first goal before the ball's even bounced? You might have the touch. When the weather's wet, can you feel who'll triumph? You've got the power. Can you read the footy future in the mullet of a full forward? Then you too might be harnessing the power of the touch. Got the touch? Download the Tab Touch app today.
You win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.